Welcome to Native America Calling. From Albuquerque, I'm Monica Brain. Two Native Americans won Pulitzer Prizes this year, and a third was a finalist. It's remarkable considering the low representation of Native writers as Pulitzer winners or nominees in the past. Today, we're going to talk with a few of those who have. The Pulitzer Prize is considered one of the top honors in literature, journalism, drama, and music. We'll get the Native perspective on the Pulitzer Prizes right after the news. Stay with us.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Another grim discovery in British Columbia, the remains of 182 bodies near a former Indian residential school. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the find was made using ground-penetrating radar.
The Lower Kootenay Band says the remains were found in unmarked graves near the site of the former St. Eugene's Mission School near Cranbrook. The school, run by the Catholic Church, operated from 1912 to the 1970s. About 100 members of the Kootenay Band attended the school. Chief Jason Louis says the band's leaders met with survivors of the school in the community before making the announcement. And Louis added his voice to the growing calls for the Catholic Church to be held accountable for running the schools.
The Nazis were held accountable for their war crimes. And I see no difference in locating the priests and nuns and the brothers that are responsible to be held accountable for their part in this attempt of genocide on Indigenous people.
The announcement comes just a month after another British Columbia First Nation found the remains of 215 children buried on the site of a former residential school near Kamloops. And the remains of 751 bodies were found near a former residential school in Saskatchewan. Other Native leaders say the need for mental health services for survivors will increase as more graves are discovered near former residential schools across Canada. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Cancel Canada Day actions are taking place across the country. A list by the group Idle No More shows more than 80 cities and communities have canceled Canada Day festivities. Calls to cancel celebrations on July 1st came after the discovery in May of unmarked burial sites of 215 students at a former residential school in British Columbia, and now more remains found in the province and also in Saskatchewan. The group Idle No More says Canada was built on genocide and there's no pride in it. The group is calling for reflection on the injustices suffered by Indigenous people. Protests are planned across the country. June was Pride Month, and an Indigenous group in Montana is celebrating this summer. As Yellowstone Public Radio's Taylor Stagner reports, it comes after a year of trials for the LGBTQ community.
David Herrera with the Montana Two-Spirit Society says that the event is an opportunity to heal after Indigenous communities were disproportionately affected by COVID-19 and a suite of anti-LGBTQ+ legislation.
The theme this year is, you know, celebrating our resiliency as well as also healing, really focus on how we can heal, because our Native Two-Spirit community has really, you know, we're disproportionately impacted when it came to COVID.
The term Two-Spirit describes the complex relationship Indigenous people have with gender, same-sex relationships, and roles within a community. Many tribes have their own words and understandings for these interlocking relationships. Herrera says that the Two-Spirit gathering in Montana is often the only time of the year Two-Spirit and LGBTQ+ Indigenous people can be out and proud.
Yeah, people are extremely excited. We're getting an amazing turnout of registrations because people have not seen each other in 2 years.
Two bills made it into Montana law this year that LGBTQ+ advocates say are harmful. One law keeps trans girls from playing intercollegiate sports. Another stems from the Montana Religious Freedoms Restoration Act and has the potential to shield discriminatory acts towards LGBTQ+ persons, according to their advocates. Monday, California barred state funds from being used to travel to Montana, citing anti-LGBTQ+ legislation passed by the Montana legislature. For National Native News, I'm Taylor Stagner.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous population. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme. Support by Navajo Language Renaissance, presenting Rosetta Stone Navajo for iPads, iPhones, Chromebooks, and Android devices with two learning levels and a self-correcting pronunciation feature. Info at NavajoRenaissance.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain. Two Native writers won the Pulitzer Prize this year. The prize is named after Hungarian newspaper publisher Joseph Pulitzer, who willed his riches to honor excellence in journalism, literature, music, and drama. The first award was given in 1917. This year, the Pulitzer Prize for Fiction went to Louise Erdrich for her book, The Night Watchman. Here she is on Native America Calling in March of last year, talking about the main character, Thomas, and how he's modeled after her grandfather.
I came up with this name for Thomas, and his last name is Wajushk, and that's the word for muskrat. And I didn't think about it when I named him, and I'll just read this little bit here. Thomas was named for the muskrat, Wajushk, the lowly, hardworking, water-loving rodent. Muskrats were everywhere on the slough-dotted reservation. But although the Wajushk were numerous and ordinary, they were also crucial. In the beginning, after the Great Flood, it was the muskrat who had managed to help remake the earth. And in that way, as it turned out, Thomas was perfectly named. And in the creation story, the Anishinaabe creation story, there's four divers who the creator sends down, and the last one is really the most humble of them, and that's the muskrat. And the muskrat manages to bring back a tiny clump of earth in its paw, and in that way the creator makes the earth. Now, that tells me so much about our ancestors and our people, because humility was, and it's in that story, humility was the way people operated. You know, my grandfather never, he didn't even take money for his work. The tribal chairman was paid $30 a month at the time, but the tribe was broke, and so he didn't take that money.
Today we'll hear from the other Pulitzer Prize winner for 2021, Natalie Diaz, and we're going to talk with two finalists in the areas of literature and editorial cartooning. If you want to join our conversation, the number to get you in is 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. On the phone we have Natalie Diaz. She is a poet, essayist, and linguist, and the 2021 Pulitzer Prize winner for poetry for her book, Post-Colonial Love Poem. And Natalie is Mojave. She's enrolled at Gila River, and she is Akamel Otham. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Natalie.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Well, congratulations on your Pulitzer. This is incredibly significant for Native America and for you as well. How does it feel to win?
It's really lucky. It's, you never know who's on the other side of these things. So I think prizes are, you know, they're great and they're things to celebrate. And there are also many other ways, to gauge the work we're doing or who it is connecting us to. It felt especially lucky to be recognized alongside Louise, in her work. And then, of course, knowing that Marty was also being recognized. I think it felt much more meaningful to be alongside other Indigenous peoples than to be what often happens, which is just one of us in the room.
I know. That's the thing that I was just, I mean, when I saw the finalists, my eyes just popped open. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe there was three. Usually we're just barely half of one person shows up in these.
The quorum.
Yeah. And so it's phenomenal. And one of the things I didn't mention in the intro is that, you know, as far as I can tell, based on my research, the last Native American to win this was N. Scott Momaday in 1969 for The Housemaid of Dawn. And so, you know, I'm just wondering, Natalie, what you think about that, that this long it's taken to have not one but two Natives win this prize.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that's pretty reflective, I think, of Western and, you know, North and South American cultures that, you know, they don't like to count us for very long and definitely not very often. So they think, you know, I guess it's kind of like lunar cycles. They're like, oh, one came through, now we can wait a while before we have to acknowledge, you know, another one. But, you know, I think it's also a little bit of a sign of just some of the, like the pressure that that Native artists and writers are putting on national conversations, on international conversations as well. So, you know, it feels right on time in some ways. I mean, I was also the only, because I'm also Latina or Latinx, Mexican, and the last Latino to win it was the Puerto Rican writer Williams, Carlos Williams. So, you know, in some ways, I guess this is always what's at stake when we're trying to exist, is that you want to at once celebrate that you're one of few, and then you also have to recognize what that means, that there are so few of us.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, to sort of acknowledge and say there has been Pulitzer Prize winning quality work since 1969 coming out of Native America. But, you know, the committees are what committees are, and they took their time bringing more Native Americans into the fold. I want to hear, Natalie, a little bit about a post-colonial love poem.
Yeah, I mean, it's a book that's really meaningful to me. I was really emotional when I found out. I say really emotional in a Native way, right? Kind of my eyes got watering, and then I kind of got my life together again. I was like, okay, this is, I'm not going to cry. But the book to me feels, I put a lot of myself in it. And what I say by that, or what I mean by that, is that I tried really to hold on to the people I love in the book and the beings that I love in the book. And sometimes that was simply that I loved myself, or I was trying hard to, or that I loved, you know, the people in my community, or, you know, my partner, or, you know, my river and my mountain and my land, and even the strangers who I think are of consequence to me and who I am also of consequence to. And so, you know, there's a dedication that I put at the back of the book. Rather, I know we tend to put things in the front, but I also didn't want it to be seen as a lens of spectacle. But the dedication for the book, for me, I was thinking very, very much toward all of our women, or women identifying, or trans, or two-spirit, or queer persons who have gone missing, or who have been disappeared or killed. And so I was really aware of the ways I wanted to hold the bodies in the book with love. I think, you know, it's one thing we're so often denied is, you know, Indigenous love, and it's so immense and it's so overwhelming, all of the different ways that we love, not only despite the country, but also because we were meant to love. And so that's something that felt essential to me. And then, of course, I'm thinking to the news segment that was on just before we came on, and thinking about what love means in the context of these mass graveyards and genocidal cemeteries that are being discovered right now.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that too. And, you know, tomorrow we're going to talk about if it's possible for you to love your country, considering the past and the history that we've had. If you're just joining us, we are talking with Pulitzer Prize winning poet Natalie Diaz. She won the Pulitzer Prize this year for poetry for 2021. And if you want to call in and congratulate her or ask her a question, give us a call. We want to hear from you. 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Natalie, you mentioned a little bit about your river. I wonder if you might speak a bit about your love for the land and for water.
Yeah, I grew up at Fort Mojave on the Colorado River. So Jajavio is what we call it. And Fort Mojave, of course, has another name, Jaculo, at least where it's located now. But, you know, it's lucky to be, I mean, it's strange, right? I think it goes to the question you all are asking tomorrow. Is it possible to love your country? It, you know, we know what the conditions and the imaginations were that created reservations. And yet, my reservation is where I also learned to love. And it's where my relationship with my land was built. And so in some ways, when I say it's lucky, yes, I'm recognizing the reservation construction itself. And it also feels lucky and like an unfortunate luxury that I do have the relationship I have with my land and my water. You know, we look north and see where we were created right out our front doors. We look south and see where we go when we leave. And then our river runs right through the middle. It's almost as if all the things that are usually metaphorical for other people when they speak about relationships with lands and water, for us are, you know, they're undeniably physical and embodied. And so, you know, the Colorado River right now is the most endangered river in the United States. And our reservoir, which, you know, basically our river feeds the entire southwest corner of the United States and even into Mexico. And our reservoir is at the lowest it's ever been. And so you set these things alongside, again, some of these discoveries of you know, the murders of our children and our people, the disappearances of our women in two-spirit and queer and trans peoples. And you set that right alongside the water. And, you know, it's just undeniable the anti-life that this country introduced into our lands and waters. And at the same time, I think it also shows the real power of the ways that we love and care and tend to the land, mm-hmm. and that we're still able, you know, to kind of bloom within those structures.
Yeah. I want to talk more about that after the break. We're just about to go to a break. And I also want to hear a little bit of from Postcolonial Love Poem, if you'll read it to us, Natalie. You're listening to Native America Calling, 1-800-996-2848. We'll be right back. Native American patriotism is an interesting thing. Participation in military service is consistently high. At the same time, there are lasting effects from a history of violence, forced assimilation, and injustice. As America gets ready to mark Independence Day, we'll talk about the multiple sides of Native patriotism. That's on the next Native America Calling.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a no-charge, 24/7, confidential and anonymous domestic, dating, and sexual violence helpline for Native Americans. Help is available by calling 1-844-762-8483 or by clicking on the Chat Now icon on StrongHeartsHelpline.org. This program is supported by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, jamming out here in Studio 49 in Albuquerque. We're talking about the Pulitzer Prize today. It's an award in the categories of journalism, writing, and music. And two Native writers won this year in literature and poetry. And a third was a finalist in the category of editorial cartooning. The last time a Native won was in 1969. It was Kiowa author N. Scott Momaday. If you'd like to congratulate our guests or comment on the Pulitzer Prize, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. 2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Natalie Diaz is with us. She's a poet, essayist, and linguist, and the 2021 Pulitzer Prize winner for poetry. Natalie, before the break, we were talking about love of our land. Tell us a little bit more about post-colonial love poem. And then if you would, we would love to hear you read some.
Okay, great. I mean, I think, you know, post-colonial has several threads in it, but I think something that felt important to me was that I was still able to be all the things I am in it. You know, there's basketball in it because, you know, that's where my imagination was shaped, was largely on res basketball courts, you know, from here all the way, you know, deep up into run and gun territory of Navajo Nation up north. And, you know, and then again, there's a lot of poems that are in relationship to the lands and waters that I live on and grew up on. And I mean, I think in some ways I think there should be more talk about what love is for Indigenous and Native peoples. And I also think it seems like more of an anomaly than it actually is, you know, which is, I think, one thing that felt important, that the book is being escalated to other readers, because I think this assumption, of course, that we not only do we not know how to talk about love, or that we don't talk about love, but that we also don't love. And I think that's one of course, you know, the country's great mythologies about, you know, Indigenous peoples as well as anyone who's not part of, you know, the great American imagination of power. I'm just going to read this one poem, and I think it speaks largely to that. And if there's any, like, young folks, it's referencing a Beyoncé song, and then that song was also referencing a Yeah 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 song called Map. So it has a couple samples in it. They don't love you like I love you. My mother said this to me long before Beyoncé lifted the lyrics from the Yeah Yeah Yeahs. And what my mother meant by don't stray was that she knew all about it, the way it feels to need someone to love you, someone not your kind, someone white, someone, some many who live because so many of mine have not. And further, live on top of those of ours who don't. I'll say, what is the United States if not a clot of clouds, if not spilled milk or blood, if not the place we once were in the millions? America is maps. Maps are ghosts, white and layered with people and places I see through. My mother has always known best, knew that I'd been begging for them to lay my face against their white laps, to be held in something more than the loud light of their projectors as they flicker themselves sepia or blue all over my body. All this time, I thought my mother said, wait, as in give them a little more time to know your worth. When really, she said, wait, meaning heft. Preparing me for the yoke of myself, the beast of my country's burdens, which is less worse than my country's plow. Yes, when my mother said, they don't love you like I love you, she meant, Natalie, that doesn't mean you aren't good. And so just that idea, again, that idea of American goodness that so many of us, I think so many of our brothers in particular, I think a lot of my brothers, and how whatever goodness is in America, in the Americas, has never been something that was offered to them or to many of us.
I wonder if you thought about how you can love back when that love hasn't been offered to you.
Yeah, and I mean, I think we learn love from land and water, right? Like, I feel like the way, like, for example, we learn self-care here in the desert from the mesquite because, you know, people think nothing can live in the desert. And we've already been busting through the 122, 123 degree heat and you think nothing can live here. However, we learn from the mesquite tree how to take care of ourselves and how to take care of one another. For example, you know, like, this is the best time to harvest mesquite tree roots, or mesquite tree roots, because, like, for our cradle boards, because right now is when they're most pliable, because the mesquite tree knows so well how to hold the water, how to hold it and save it so that it can distribute it to its limbs and to its fruits throughout the summer. And so I think that, you know, I think there's been this kind of this binary or this dichotomy that says, like, everything we do is always against the state or against the United States. And yet I think there's also things that we do, which we have done since we were first created, which our creator showed us how to do, whether it was through their language or through shaping our bodies or through giving us these trees and these waters and these mountains, that we've done from the beginning, that even the United States couldn't imagine enough to stop us or to hold us, you know. And those imaginations happen because, you know, we are also citizens of this country. You know, I have family, for example, who has participated in the military, you know, and so it's kind of this, it can be a paradox, I think, if we don't allow ourselves our full capacity of imagination and love and the ways that our creators imagined us before this country could come with its very narrow and poor imagination and the fears that it has, which leads it to do such horrible things to us.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Wow. Natalie, your work, it kind of gives me goosebumps. I love it. Today, we are talking with Natalie Diaz. She won the Pulitzer Prize this year for poetry. And we're talking with Pulitzer Prize finalists as well. In a minute, I'm going to introduce a few more. But if you want to get in on the conversation, let's hear from you. Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. And we've got a special call on the line. Mark Trahant is joining us. Hey, Mark. Mark is the editor of Indian Country Today. How are you today, Mark?
Hi, Monica. I'm great.
Okay, so I know I left out in the intro that you were also a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, before me, let me mention that John Tetpon actually would be considered a winner. John Tetpon is an Inupiat, and he was part of the Anchorage Daily News series, People in Peril, which won the Public Service Pulitzer, which is actually the grand prize.
That's right. What year was that?
I think it must have been about 1988.
Okay.
I'm doing this off the top of my head. I've actually been a Pulitzer judge twice.
Oh, wow.
And I know you have some stuff coming up later, but there's a great story about cartoons. And one of the unfortunate things of the Pulitzers is that the way the process works, it goes through what's called a jury pool. So when someone's a nominee, that's when it comes through the jury pool, and you're one of three. That then goes to the board of trustees for the Pulitzers, who may or may not take that jury pool. So in our case, the year we were a finalist for Fraud in Indian Country, we had gone through the jury pool and pretty much won every major award that year, got to the Pulitzer board, and they picked somebody from another category and moved it into us, into ours.
Huh.
And in cartoons this year, that's exactly what happened, where the board couldn't come to consensus. The jury pool had done its work. And the curious thing about that is that there's a secret cartoon contest, and it's a contest of all the best cartoons that editors killed.
Oh.
I was at the Seattle Post-Intelligencer and editing David Horsey, who won two Pulitzers. And David used to give me a bad time and said he could never enter this secret contest because I'd never killed one of his cartoons.
Well, Mark, I mean, you know, folks need to know about this. It's been a while, but your Fraud in Indian Country, which is, of course, you know, what started everything with the Cobell settlement. Tell our listeners about this.
Yeah, we looked at oil and gas leases and how the Bureau, how the payments didn't match what the receipts were and how people were being cheated out of their rightful income. And it really did lead to both the Senate investigation and then later the Cobell litigation.
And I heard that, you know, this was back when people used fax machines and they were like faxing the article around, like, look at this. You can't believe this. Is that or is that
right,
just a myth?
Pre-internet. No, it's true. And the first day's series ran 13 pages in a newspaper. And you can imagine, I mean, we used to joke that the series itself was thick enough to kill a small puppy when it was tossed to a door.
Holy. Yeah, I mean, the Arizona Republic has done some really fine reporting in Indian country. And it's really exciting to, you know, see work of Native journalists and Native artists get acknowledged. Mark, anything else you want to share about the Pulitzer?
Well, the main thing I think is more Native journalists need to enter. So much of this is we self-center. We don't even get into the entry pool, and so we don't get juries to even look at us. And that's really the critical first step.
Oh, yeah. You know, every year I post that Native America Calling didn't win a Pulitzer. And it's kind of as a joke because there wasn't an audio section. And then this year there actually was an audio section. But you got to enter yourself for something like that. Well, Mark, I have no doubt that Indian Country Today will have you back on the show and you'll be celebrating a Pulitzer that Indian Country Today has won. So thank you so
much. Take care.
Yeah.
Okay,
thank you so much for calling in. If you want to call in and congratulate our Pulitzer Prize winner or finalists, give us a call. The number is 1-800-996-2848. I want to add two more voices to the conversation. Joining us now is Marty Tubold Sr. He is an artist who also does editorial cartoons and was a finalist for the 2021 Pulitzer Prize. And Marty is Oglala Lakota. Welcome back to Native America Calling, Marty.
Thank you. It's my honor to be here.
Also, we've got Tommy Orange. He is an author and finalist for the 2019 Pulitzer Prize in Literature for his book, There, There. And Tommy is a citizen of the Cheyenne and Arapaho tribes of Oklahoma. Hey there, Tommy.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, Marty, let's start with you. So as I mentioned, you were a finalist. There was no award in the editorial category. Mark explained a little bit about what happened with that. But honestly, I just have to say, I think you were robbed. You were robbed. So how did it feel to first find out that you were a finalist?
Well, first of all, it's a great honor to be, you know, even a finalist for the Pulitzer. And, you know, I was on my way to get coffee. And usually they award this in April, but they postponed it, which I didn't know about. So I thought he was already awarded. I never gave it a second thought. And then on my way to get coffee, my Instagram exploded, you know, just everybody talking about this. So I had to look it up, had to stop and look it up. And I couldn't understand who won or who didn't win. So I had to go home and go on the internet and go to the website and, you know, try to figure out what exactly happened.
Yeah, so they just declined to offer the award in that category altogether, which I guess is probably better than losing out to somebody. But you were among some other fine editorial cartoonists, and I think there was a piece that you all put together about it. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, we kind of got together. You know, we know each other through different functions. I mean, me and Ken were. Won the Herblock a while back. Well, he won and I was the second place guy, but we met there. And me and Lalo met at the Indigenous Comic-Con in Albuquerque a few years ago. We sat on a panel. So we kind of knew each other. So I got together with them and we're emailing back and forth and kind of bantering. And this cartoon kind of came out of that banter, you know. Then we published it with the New York Times. Kind of an agreement that, you know, they put their bylines on there as well. So It was kind of a unifying message. We didn't really want to do a press release type message because, you know, those things get taken out of content. Mm-hmm. And we thought it would be more appropriate if we answered in our medium.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just remember it was like a little bit of joking about like maybe it had to do with the recount or asking for a recount, but that you draw yourself as a bison, as a buffalo, and there was a little like thing that, you know, your heart was broken, and it just made me so sad. But your work is remarkable, Marty, and I just wonder if you might share a little bit before we go to break about what you think about when you're sitting down to start a cartoon.
Well, a cartoon, you know, these political cartoons, you got to have your basically your hand on what's going on in the news cycles. These cycles come and go throughout the week. But I write the thing on Friday and produce it over the weekend, or sometimes I get it done on Friday. But then I send it to the newspapers that have me, which is Lakota Times out of Martin, South Dakota, and then the Mandan Rikrahadetsa Times out of North Dakota, are the two papers that carry my work. And so I send it to them, and their weeklies, you know, they're just small newspapers. They don't actually print until the following Thursday. And that's when I release it to the other organizations I work with, and on Facebook and Instagram and whatnot. So you're actually seeing these cartoons a week late. But you know, sometimes they predict the future too. You know, sometimes sometimes the news, what I pick out on Friday actually gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And on Friday, you know, the following week, it sounds like it's breaking news, you know. But,
Yeah. You're ahead of the curve. Well, we're talking with Marty Tubbles. He was a finalist for the 2021 Pulitzer Prize. Also, Tommy Orange is with us. He was a finalist in 2019. And we're going to go to a short break, but we want to hear from you. Give us a call if you want to congratulate these Pulitzer Prize finalists or Natalie Diaz, the Pulitzer Prize winner for 2021. 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. After the break, we'll talk a little bit more with Marty about his work, as well as hear from Tommy about his book, They're There, and Your Voice is Missing. Give us a call. 1-800-996-2848.
Support by Amerind, Indian Country's 100% tribally owned insurance partner. Amerind works with tribal governments and their business enterprises to provide effective commercial insurance coverage, strengthen Native American communities, protect tribal sovereignty, and help keep dollars in Indian Country. More information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto solutions at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
You're tuned in to Native America Calling. I'm Monica Brain, senior producer, and we are talking about the Pulitzer Prize today. Before the break, we were talking with Marty Tubbles Sr. He's an editorial cartoonist and an artist, and was a finalist for the 2021 Pulitzer Prize. So, Marty, tell us about some of the topics that you cover in your editorial cartoons.
Well, mostly I cover national news that has an effect or affects Native Americans. And I do it from my point of view. You know, I'm not an elected official, and I certainly can't speak for all Native Americans. But as a Native American man, I can give my point of view. And a lot of times that resonates with Indian Country and, you know, some non-Indians, which is, you know, a bonus, a plus.
That's right, you know, because maybe there's some educating going on through there. What were some of your favorites that you did last year?
Well, it's hard to say. You know, my grandkids always say, what's your favorite color? And being an artist, they say, oh, I love them all.
Right. Well, do you have one that in particular that, you know, you wanted to make sure you submitted to Pulitzer that you felt like was pretty significant?
Well, you know, I do weekly, so I got 52 a year, and some of these guys, you know, they work in dailies, so, you know, they do four or five a week, so they have a much broader range to choose from. So I tend to go to Facebook and look at which is more popular with the people, gets the most hits. I narrow it down to 30 or so. And then I select 15, and then from those 15, those go to the various awards, you know, contests that I apply for. Mm-hmm. They get together the fees for these contests and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And so we never know how it's going to turn out. But it's something, you know, being an artist, you're a business person. You have to promote. Well, you know, you manufacture something from raw materials, you promote it. And you know, you got to get it out there. And these contests give you the exposure you need to promote your product. So they're kind of a necessary evil.
Well, you know, it's something that I think, you know, when Native folks see your name up there and see that you're a finalist for such a prestigious award, it really it brings a sense of pride and a sense of connection and belonging that, you know, is pretty great. Let's talk with Tommy Orange. He's an author and finalist in 2019 for his book, There, There. Anything, Tommy, you'd like to start us off with that you'd like to share about this year's winners and finalists?
Oh, it just made me so happy. I love Natalie and Luis's work so much. Admire them as people and as writers. So, you know, it's good for all Native artists when we get acknowledged like this. And for them to felt extra special because I've just admired their work for many, many, many years and had the chance to meet them as well.
Absolutely. And so what was it like for you when in 2019 when you were nominated?
It was pretty emotional. You know, it's one of those big prizes. And being an insecure person, there was, you know, the success. It didn't like go to my head. I didn't think like, yeah, I deserve all of this. I felt more suspicious of all of it. And, you know, I sold the book in the wake of Standing Rock and, Trump getting in and felt like some people were like wanting to really be against what that meant, what that version of America was going to mean. And my book was, you know, kind of like on this other side. And so it felt like, you know, it was related to what was going on politically. And so the prize to me felt like acknowledging from this other area of acknowledgement that it meant something. It had a little more weight to it than like the book doing well and the book being popular, this kind of thing.
Did you have Did you have like a little bit of imposter syndrome thinking about like... oh, well, you know, because of Standing Rock and stuff like that, that's why it went in, as opposed to, you know, it's standing on its own merit, which it absolutely is.
I mean, I'm still waiting to see when the imposter syndrome will go away. I don't know that kind of thing, you know, especially when you're with the work and you're just trying to do the work. I feel like I don't know what I'm doing all the time. So, you know, a lot of these things, the criticism and the negativity tends to stick, and the acclaim goes away for me. Like it does not stick around to help me. So it's really nice, and it's amazing for, you know, sales and this acknowledgement. And like I said, it's good for all Native artists when we get acknowledged in this big way. And that's really important for us to be able to thrive as artists. But in terms of lasting effect, I don't really get to take it that far with me.
Mm-hmm. Well, for folks who haven't read There, There yet, give us a quick rundown. Well, you know, it doesn't have to be quick. Tell us about the book.
Yeah, so I'm writing about people that are Native people that are from the city, which is from Oakland. And I tried to write, you know, like a really contemporary feeling book because so often we're depicted just historically, and it's deeply damaging for people in this country to only think of us in the past tense. And for us to see, you know, sort of with their eyes is kind of sometimes how we can see ourselves because we're in their systems. To see ourselves as already gone and that being the only authentic way for us to be Native people is deeply damaging to our psyches and to our spirits. And so I wanted to write a book that felt very, very now and sort of showing the way we live our lives in contemporary times. And so you have all these characters going to a powwow at the Oakland Coliseum, and they're interfacing with technology, and you kind of find out in the end how they're all related. at a sort of a cataclysmic ending at this Oakland powwow.
Yeah. Can I tell you my favorite part of that, of your book? It was,
sure.
Yeah. So, okay. What I loved about there was that I got to see, so, you know, we're, as Native people, we're not monoliths, right? So we're not the same. And these stereotypes that go around about us, we're so different in so many ways. And there was a little piece of so many different people that I have known, and I saw a little bit of myself in there too. But my favorite part was this, I think it was like at one of the characters was at a conference, and they were talking about the serious issue of suicide, the epidemic of suicide among Native youth. And this character was saying, you know, we keep telling Native people, young people, hang on, don't jump. But what we don't realize is that they're standing inside a building that's on fire, and we're asking them not to jump. And it was one of those things where you just put the book aside for a second and you just sit. I just sat there and sort of stared at the wall and thought about it for a long time. It was incredibly profound to me. Is there anything you can share about that moment in the book?
I mean, I think people don't understand suicide and mental health and addiction. And I've had a lot of those in my life, interfacing with them and myself and my family. And even in the work and working in the Native community in Oakland, I worked at a nonprofit for many years. Mm-hmm. I think it's a really misunderstood thing. And the people that are suffering from it and the people who end up taking their own lives, they don't give them compassion, that what they're going through is causing them to jump out. So we build nets below the windows instead of figuring out what the fire is. And so that's where it came from, a very personal place, and from life experience. And, you know, the metaphor was just trying to get people to understand where these people are coming from, that, you know, that you don't want to be here is a profound state to be in. And people have to investigate where that comes from a little more.
Yeah, I would agree. Let's take a call. We've got Joey in Santa Fe, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Hey there, Joey. Thanks for giving us a call.
Hi, thank you. Good afternoon. Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for taking my call. I just want to congratulate all the Pulitzer finalists for this year, and specifically a special shout out to Marty Tubal Sr. You know, in our hearts and in Indian country, he won. So I just want to say that much. Thank you.
Joey, thank you too. I felt the same way. Marty, I was even thinking, like, I'm going to make him one that's like a Native Pulitzer and send it to you. What do you want to share, Marty, with Joey?
I just want to say thank you for thinking about me like that. It's really nice to hear from people. You know, the artists, we work in solitude. And when we do look up from our drawing boards or work tables, you know, it's nice to hear things like that.
Yeah.
More fuel for the fire, as it were.
I agree. Natalie, let's bring you back into the conversation. What about you? What's fuel for the fire for you right now?
I think, you know, everything is, right? I think... Yeah, I mean, I'm thinking now of several fires, right? That the larger fire that Tommy's talking about is, you know, like, do we need more fuel? I wonder sometimes. I think maybe sometimes I need more water than I do, you know, the fire. But I guess what is, like, most valuable to me in terms of the work is, you know, you had talked a little bit about things like imposter syndrome or, you know, is that it's really not worth it to do it if we're doing it alone. You know, I don't like to be the only Native in a room. I don't like to be the only person who, you know, who is representative of larger groups. And so I think for me, what has been really valuable and what continues to be valuable is understanding that you know, every time I'm present, I'm present with everybody who's behind me, or, you know, even, for example, like Tommy's work is out there and was out there ahead of this book. And so in some ways, my book was not alone because of that, or because of Therese, or because of Louise, you know, and like not alone in that Marty and Louise were both in the room. And so that's, I think, what feels important to me is we've been so overburdened with the statistics of how few we are, and yet we also know the abundance and the overwhelm and the multitude we feel when we're each in our own communities. And so just trying to recognize that, to recognize that what is abundance and necessary excess and celebration and joy to me will be something threatening to the United States, and yet I need to find those ways to feel those kinds of celebrations and joys, you know, even as we're maybe in perpetual mourning.
Yeah, it's true. And also, I just feel like as Native people, we're never going to really do like, I'm the greatest, the greatest author alive. You know, Tommy, can you see yourself in some sort of like rap battle, you know, where you're proclaiming yourself as the greatest author alive?
I think there could be some kind of self-deprecation battle that I might do okay in. But I'm not gonna, I would never want to do any version of that. It makes me deeply uncomfortable just thinking about it.
Well, Tommy, what are you working on next?
I'm working on another novel, and I am doing a big push to try to finish a solid draft this month, and I feel a little bit superstitious about sharing too much about it, but I'm pretty excited about it, and there's a historical piece to it and also a contemporary piece and a lot of characters, as in there, and I don't at this time want to say too much more about it.
Oh, that's plenty. That's plenty. It's we're excited to check that out, Tommy. And if you want to get a hold of there, it's anywhere that you buy books. Check out your local bookstore, and you can probably get a copy of it there. What about you, Marty? What are you working on?
Let's see. Prior to all this, I was working on a graphic novel about the life of Crazy Horse. Oglala Chief, and working on a collection of comics with Fulcrum Publishing, a collection of editorial cartoons. So those were in the works pre-pandemic, so we're hoping we can get them back on track again soon.
Love it. I love it. And what about you, Natalie? What's coming up for you?
It's just a little bit of writing. I'm working on a small film project and a little like visual art project. So giving myself, I guess that's the fuel maybe, right, for the words is the non-words.
What advice do you have for Native poets out there who are no doubt looking up to you and the what you've accomplished?
Oh, I mean, our first poets, I think, are our elders, you know, and our families. Like, my mom's, like, one of the funniest but also most, like, you know, powerful poet I think I've ever been around. And so I think there's something about turning inward, even though the gauge of success or the gauge of when you become a poet or who tells you something is a poem happens from the outside. Something that's been the most valuable for me the last few years is to turn back inward and to think about the smallness of what matters to me. And that it's big in these spaces, you know, to try to bloom it at home before I look too far outside for non-natives to tell me what they think is good. And I know it's hard to do because we're all trying to make a living or make a mark or get a job. But that's been something that has been extremely valuable, is to say, like, you know, yeah, like, how do I bloom this small idea or these small loves in my family or in my community before I jump too far outside.
I love it. Yeah. Well, we'll be thinking about that. And I want to say congratulations again to the winners of the Pulitzer Prize, as well as the finalists. Thanks so much to our guests today, Natalie Diaz, Tommy Orange, Marty Tubles. Also, thanks to Mark Trahant for giving us a call. We're back tomorrow with a conversation about the 4th of July. Do you celebrate it as a holiday? We want to hear why you do or you don't. I'm senior producer Monica Brain. We'll see you tomorrow.
Looking to get your high school diploma? Southwestern Indian Polytechnic Institute offers Native Americans ages 18 or older training and preparation courses for the high school equivalency diplomas, in person and online, beginning September 6th. This no-charge program includes testing fees and other resources will be available to help with supplies and living expenses. Space is limited. Application deadline is August 6th. More by calling 505-382-4287 or at sipi.edu, who support this show.
Squeezed ya we osta uniela dege to kanihai. Tatlilo star si yunda di nitalo his selena he go teha a yella nu dan dega access diski. We tatla no het aniawia a yella nu dan dega an access diski. Naski ye get stella at healthcare.gov 1-800-318-2596. He are get to know some Medicare, hala Medicaid una doshka I.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.